can step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 727. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by, with my guest co-host, Miss Cecilia.
Well, it's called
Hughes.
Celia.
Thank you. Oh, my. And then joining us by telephone is Nicole Shiro. Okay, well, I thought she was here. You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. Stick with us.
Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
It is Wednesday, July 5th, 2023. On the show today, we have Penfold Theater Company and their show Box. And then later, we'll be joined by the Zilker Theater Productions and their show Matilda. And of course, we're going to have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Sandy Lake, and other lakes. Stick with us.
I know it sounds a bit bizarre, but in Camelot,
that's the way things are.
Well, it's not Camelot here in Austin, Texas right now, because they said it can't be too hot.
Yeah, it is Camelot wherever we go.
Okay, all right.
So welcome, Celia Hughes.
Well, thank you. It's delightful to be here.
I'm so happy to hear you. I heard a chuckle on the telephone, which means we do have Nicole Shiro.
I'm here.
Yay. I'm so happy to hear your voice. We tried
I'm
to hear
so
it earlier, but
we
didn't. So Celia, welcome back. You are my guest co-host, even though my co-host is joining us through the art of telephony.
Well, huge shoes to fill, I have to say. So.
Yeah. So Celia Hughes is not only here as my guest co-host, she is also an apprentice learning how to be an official programmer here at Co-op. And you do have your own show on Mondays from 2 to 3 called Art Spark Radio
right.
Hour.
Yep, the Art Spark TX Radio Hour, all things art and disability.
There you go.
Fantastic.
It is fantastic. I want to introduce the folks that are sitting here with us. We have Yanina Barber Payne. Welcome back, Yanina.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
And we have newcomer to Offstage and On the Air, Lee Eden. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. So, first of all, let me just say before we get to what we really wanted, we always want Nicole here, but we have her here for a specific reason. But we just listened to a little piece of Camelot from the current production of Camelot. Which posted an early closing notice.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, it's kind of an early closing notice because it was it originally booked through, I think, June, and then it extended to September, and then it closed early.
Yeah, which I found bizarre, but then at the same time, I don't find it bizarre.
So, I don't find it bizarre at all. I have not taken anything that the Broadway season does as bizarre or not bizarre. So when it closes, it will have played 38 previews and 115 regular performances. 38 previews is a lot of previews.
That is a lot of previews. Oh, wow.
It is.
I mean, back in my day, we did 15. Typically, 2 weeks. Mm.
But didn't there used to be that they would take previews across the country? So sometimes
yes, they weren't called previews. It was just called
playing the sticks,
out of town tryouts. Thank you. And then you still had your previews once you got to New York.
Okay.
But basically, you're right. It was the same thing. So the show I did, we did our out of town preview at the Kennedy Center, and we played there for a month, and we were changing every single day for that entire month, just like you would during previews. Mm-hmm. Then we came to New York, and we did our previews, and we changed every single day. And then, of course, we opened and closed in 2 days.
Guess you didn't change enough.
Clearly not. Oh, wow. Ouch, Celia. Ouch.
That was a zing, and that was kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, funny to you, maybe. So, You know, Nicole, normally I don't disturb you when you're there at the sunny... what's the name of the town? Shady Grove? Shady Limits? Shady...
Spring Lake.
Spring Lake. I was close.
We all call it... We call it Camelot, so I died laughing that you actually played in Camelot, and I'm like, oh, I'm in Camelot.
Well, because the Kennedys used to hang out there in Spring Lake.
No, they didn't.
I know they didn't.
Jack Nicholson is from here.
What's that?
Jack Nicholson is from here.
Oh,
where he lived is like a block away. Morgan's High School is called... Their theater is called the Jack Nicholson Theater.
Well, there you go. So, thank you for being on the show. So, actually, we have you here because you went to see a preview of Back to the Future. Now, you and I have been talking about this for a while. You've been very enamored by it.
Well, I wasn't at first. Remember when they said they were doing this? I was one of
No, not at first.
Why?
But as soon as you heard about the DeLorean, you were on board.
Well, no, once I started seeing more about it and how they were doing things, I was like, now I'm intrigued.
So,
and 3 years later, I went.
Now, you have seen the previews. So now, if we were like a real journalistic thing, we wouldn't be able to talk about the show, but we're not. So we can talk about the show. Tell us your thoughts.
You know, I love going to previews, and then I love going to opening because I like seeing the changes. I like looking at what works and what doesn't work. This is the first time I walked out of a preview and went, I don't know what to change. I don't know what went wrong. Everything was fantastic. What an incredible show. It was fantastic. Just a special, special show. And I can't believe I knew I'd enjoy it and have a good time after my obsession with it. But I did not expect to really love it the way I did.
Well, that was great. But I
do have... My brother can't stop talking about it. Casey is like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Great. Well, but we're not talking to Casey. We're talking to you.
I know. But that's a hard cookie for him.
It's a hard cookie?
Well, so he's a hard cookie to please.
Oh, okay. Well, so then what would you change?
Nothing.
I know.
Do
you have a favorite? Yeah. What was your favorite? Do you have a highlight of the show that you would share with us?
You know, I was trying to say, like, who could be better, who could be struck. Every single person in that show is so perfectly cast and so talented. They only brought over two of the original cast members from London. They brought over Roger Bart playing Doc Brown. Mm-hmm. And they brought over, whoa, God, this guy's talented. His first time on Broadway, and I can't wait to see more of Hugh Colt. He played George McFly. And
they asked me to do it.
Crispin Glover, who's going to top that? Well, this guy, Hugh Colt, whoa, he did his own thing. And it was not the movie, yet it was everything about the movie you loved, from even Doc and his little architecture stage showing how they're going to do stuff, that lighting on fire, to the DeLorean taking off and you see the tire tracks and the fire. Oh, there was fire on stage. And the DeLorean flew over the two of us upside down with Doc and Marty in it. I mean, and I thought things special effects wise, how are they going to get the clock tower and get the dock up there? And it's very simple, but it was really brilliant. Nothing was a gimmick. And that's what I was surprised by. I went to the fourth preview ever at 3 p.m. on a Sunday. And, you know, Sunday matinees aren't always hopping and hip. It was insane in there. And the other thing is, there's some of the music of Huey Lewis and songs that we associate with Back to the Future. And those songs were in there, but they weren't the main part. All the new music is really the highlight of it. And it was just really wonderful.
Well,
I'm still can't believe I have nothing bad to say.
Well, but you have a lot to say, and that's great. Unfortunately, we have to stop because we have a little bit more of show to do. So that's great. I'm so glad you got to see it. I was really thrilled when I got your text.
Yeah, I'm excited. Casey wants to go see Here Lies Love. I can't believe my brother wants to do that. So
it's an amazing show. You will tell Casey he will like it. It's great. And I would,
you would say that.
And I would be in the stand-up section, not in the sit-down section.
Well, I will take that in mind when we get our seats. We're going to go see that, Sweeney, and we're going to go see this again.
Great.
Take the family.
Awesome. So we need to move on. Do you want to stick with us and join in the conversation, or you want to hang up? It's up to you.
How about it's up to you? Choices for you.
No, then I'm going to stick. Then you're stuck on. Because I don't have time to argue. Because we're doing. So at the end of when we break before our next show, we're going to hear a little bit of music from Back to the Future. But we did have the sad news of the loss of Alan Arkin.
This that week, one was a bummer.
Who is mostly known as a film and television icon. I don't use that word lightly, but he has done a lot of theater. He won a Tony Award for his first lead role on Broadway, and he won an Oscar for his first lead role in a movie.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, he's not talented or anything.
No, he's not.
No.
So he won the Tony for Enter Laughing, which was really his second Broadway show. He's got his training. He did a lot of training at Second City in Chicago in the 60s.
Oh, that was my place, my jam where I went. Well, I didn't go in the
60s. Not in the
60s,
you didn't.
No.
And then his first Broadway thing was a Second City performance on Broadway in 1961. And then Enter Laughing played 1 year, from 1963 to 1964, which is what he won his Tony Award. But he was also in Love, L-U-V, Hail Skadike. I don't know what that is, but I want to read it.
You want to know what's funny? It's all the shows I saw him in when I was looking at his obituary. I'm like, I don't even know any of these shows. And yeah.
Well, you know,
on Wikipedia, you know, I was surprised.
You know the Sunshine Boys. He was in. He directed the Sunshine Boys. He directed a show called Molly.
I mean, that's Candor and Ed, Lisa. You know, I know that.
Molly?
No, the Sunshine
Molly.
Boys.
Molly.
Sunshine Boys. Boy. Oh, the musical Sunshine Boys. Yeah, I think this was the straight play Sunshine Boys.
I know.
And
you know.
Then his last thing he directed on Broadway was called Taller Than a Dwarf, which I don't think we can say anymore. I'm just going to say that right out loud.
That must have been a long time ago, right?
No, 2000.
Yeah, well, that's a while ago.
Really?
I guess it is.
Yeah, it is.
He was also, I forgot, he was nominated for an Oscar for The Russians Are Coming, which is kind of a fun movie.
But I was surprised that the one Oscar he won, I would have thought he would have won an Oscar before that, but for Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah, Little Miss Sunshine was amazing. Anyway, rest in peace, Alan Arkin. Let's see what else I want to. Oh, I guess I want to talk about this. While we're staying in the sad realm of things, a theater I had not heard of in Seattle called Book It, which is pretty amazing. I'll tell you about what their deal was, but they're shutting down after 33 years actually. And Book It is a theater company that is dedicated to works of literature and showing. They have a mission of performing great literature into great theater. And they do a lot of prose work. It's spoken on stage and it's spoken on stage as well as it being staged. They did more in their 30 years, 150 original adaptations.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think that's fantastic. What a smart name for a theater, too.
Truly. They just could not make it work financially.
That's a bummer.
And it says, and this is an article from American Theater Magazine written by, it doesn't say who it's written by. That's interesting. It says,
I've done that a lot lately, Lisa. It just says editors or conglomerates. I've noticed that.
It doesn't
lately,
say anything. It didn't say anything.
That's strange.
So it said that Book It says its experience is similar to theater organizations across the country that continue to balance increasing production costs and the attempts to provide a livable wage with uncertain financial model and donations that have not returned to pre-pandemic levels. And this is something I talk about incessantly. I'm like a broken needle here. And one of the things that I'm proud of Book It Theater Company for doing that no theater companies here in Austin have been able to do is they did not want to move forward if they could not give people a living wage. And I don't know how they do it. I mean, as someone that runs a theater that struggles and unsuccessfully, by the way, to give anybody a living wage that works in our theater, I don't know how they do it, but I commend them for their integrity. But it's a sad loss, and it's not. It's like I've had an article like this almost every single week that I've had.
I was about to say it seems to be a lot lately, and that's saddening.
Well, and the thing that's distressing about that is that, yeah, it's ethically it's a wonderful choice to say we're not going to move forward if we can't pay people. But then what steps into the void, and who is really listening to that? Are the people that who need to fund the theater, are they even paying attention? Is the
true
question.
Well, that's true across the board, and I am sure it's not just their commitment to a livable wage was not. I'm sure the decision wasn't based on one thing, but I do know that it's hard to run a theater in today's environment, and more than getting back to pre-pandemic levels, which would be nice, but also just having an attitude in this country that artists, it's okay for artists to struggle. It's okay for artists to work well below the poverty level, because it's part of their craft, it's their love, it's their passion. So yeah, it's okay, and that is the attitude of almost everybody in this country, and it's so frustrating, and it's unfair because they wouldn't ask anybody else anywhere to do that. And I say, before I say anything else, I should say that the opinions expressed here on Offstage and on the Air are not those of Co-op, the board of directors, or the staff, but simply our opinions.
Right.
Darn it. Okay, shall I step off the soapbox since we only have a couple more? But no, I've got to go right to this next thing, which also burns my beehive a little bit. Another article in, is it an American Theater? No, it was in the New York Times, by Michael Paulson. Byline from Michael Paulson. The headline is, "It's getting hard to stage a school play without political drama." Ooh. And they're talking about this entire thing that's going on. And it, interestingly enough, it's going on left and right. So right now it's the right that's attacking theater. But it was the left for a long time saying, you know, in essence of political correctness and whatnot, you can't do X, Y, or Z. You can't do these very problematic shows that have been in the canon for years and years and years. So it's happened on both sides, and both sides can be frustrated. But currently, right now, this whole thing, I mean, this article, just the reasons why some of these things have been, they rejected Three Sisters, Chekhov, because it deals with adultery. And that some boys might play women. So the production of She Kills Monster by a girl school would have included, because it includes gay content.
Oh my goodness!
They got rid of that.
It's like they take a dartboard and just throw it up there. What should we be angry at this week?
If you ask the people that are removing it, they probably couldn't even tell you the plot. They've just read somewhere in one of their little go-to, mind-numbing lists.
Yeah.
This is a bad play, and they just all parrot that.
And they also don't look at the big picture. For instance, the 86 Mean Girls for bullying, but the overall message is anti-bullying.
Yeah.
But there does show bullying. Here's one: the lack of white characters
really
in
a lot.
Fences.
The musical.
The lack of white characters in Fences.
Well, that's from a.
Well, we know who it's from, wow. but to say that out loud, oh my Lord, Oklahoma, because it has the word "damn" in it. Newsies has the word bastards in it. They mention God in The Little Mermaid. These are all reasons why they have 86 things, and it's put teachers in a precarious position where they don't feel comfortable. They're starting to like question everything they want to do. So it's so hard, and they're self-censoring themselves.
Yeah, and it just—I
have to tell you, one thing I really enjoyed in the Jimmys watching when I watched the Jimmys last week. Did you see that one of the finalists was nominated for his role in Kinky Boots? And I'm like, God bless that teacher who put Kinky Boots on in their school. Yep. You go, teacher.
Yeah,
right.
That was fantastic.
Yep.
So there are some teachers that are fighting for it, Lisa.
I know. Oh, I know. But it's not just it's being legislated these days. So that's the hard part.
I know.
All right. So we're running out of time, and we're just gonna jump. I do want to say one thing. We talked about this article from American Theater Magazine, which has since the pandemic been online only. It is going back to print, folks, which is really good.
Exciting?
And one of the things American Theater Magazine does, they print I don't know if it's a full length, but they print a full play in every. It's going to be a quarterly. I'm looking so forward to that. Mm-hmm. And the final thing is a bit of
it's
fun.
It's all pretty and glossy and
I know
fantastic.
it's P&G we like to call that. No, not Procter and Gamble. Pretty and glossy. All right.
Pretty and glossy.
I have theater horoscopes, and I don't have time for everybody. But Lee, I'm going to do yours. What's your sign?
I'm a Taurus.
You're a Taurus. Okay, so Taurus. Oh, there it is. Wow. Okay. You are Emmett Forrest from Legally Blonde, and here's your horoscope. July is all about... Oh, July?
Yeah, we're in July.
Yep, time flies.
Yeah, but isn't Taurus April? Oh, okay, I get it. Never mind. It's just, okay, never mind. I get it. July is all about home, the heart, and family for you, Taurus. With the full moon in Capricorn, you'll be feeling lively and social. Put your home skills to the test by trying to whip up new dishes and entertainment sets. Neighbors, friends, and nearby relatives are sure to rave over your thoughtful gatherings and lavish food this month, should you choose to embrace it. So you are from Legally Blonde. And Yanina, let's do you as well, and then we have to stop.
Capricorn, please.
Capricorn. What month is that?
That's
January. I'm Capricorn as well.
January. Oh, good. So this will be Jeremy and Yanina. And I'm Capricorn as well.
Come on. Well, there you go.
I'm not really. I just want to be.
You just want to be. Yeah.
I'm a Capricorn wannabe. Oh, it doesn't start at January.
It starts in December.
Mm-hmm. No, it starts... Yeah. Huh. Where's January?
It started on the 22nd or 23rd.
Yeah, no, it's not. Okay, there it is. Wait, no, that's Aquarius. Capricorn. Whew. Oh, you're Ilana from She Loves Me. Good thing around Christmas, Nicole, because you know why. Right?
Why?
12 days why? To Christmas, 12 days to Christmas. Mm.
The sixth
plenty of times
you
were Christmas shopping.
Okay, here it is, Capricorn. Everything's going your way, Capricorn.
Oh,
social invitations, money, and accolades are coming hot this month.
Okay.
Business and personal partners will be taking you out to dinner.
Oh.
You'll be meeting new people, maybe even in a library or a radio station.
Oh.
You'll spend quality time with friends and really be able to let your hair down after months of hard work, which is true.
Oh.
Enjoy all the fun activities this July has to offer.
What great news for today.
Okay.
Lisa, where did you pull these? Did you pull these from Playbill?
Playbill. It was an article on Playbill.
Yeah,
okay.
They used to do them and then stop. That's
they did.
Great.
Playbill stopped a lot of our favorite things. All right, we're going to take a break, and we're going to say goodbye to Nicole Shiro. Nicole, go to the beach, sit and go plop in front of the sand for me and have an oyster.
All right. I could do that.
Please do. So thanks for coming on. Thanks for telling us about Back to the Future. It sounds amazing.
Thank you. And I want to come back, and I can't wait to talk about Here Lies Love and all that stuff.
Can't
it was
wait.
Different from when you saw it before.
That's true. All right. So let's take a break
right.
and listen to
Love
a little
you all.
Bit.
Have a great show.
Bye,
thank
Nicole.
You.
Bye,
Nicole.
Bye, Nicole. So let's listen to a little bit of Back to the Future. It's only a matter of time. We'll be right back. I'm looking around. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP. Streaming live at KOOP.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Celia Hughes, which I got your name this time.
You did.
Yeah, it doesn't happen always. We did not, during that, we did not introduce him, but he came in, so I'm going to reintroduce everybody anyway. But Jeremy Rashad Brown came in the middle of our talk last time. Hi, Jeremy.
Hello, Lisa Shipps.
How are you? Welcome back.
Well, thank you
for having me. It's always good to have you here.
Oh, it's always great to be here.
Lee Eden.
Hello.
Welcome back. And Yanina Barber Payne.
Hello, hello.
I can say welcome back because you were here in the first half. So y'all are part of Penfold Theater's production of Jarrett King's Box.
That's right. Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming on.
Confirmed.
So that's news to Jeremy.
Yeah. Tell us about the show. One of you. I don't care who. Jeremy, since you play the titular character.
Well, the show, in a nutshell, is about Henry Box Brown, the slave that mailed himself to freedom in 1849 after his wife Nancy was sold away from him, as well as his four children, while he was at work at a tobacco farm. And so, basically, what the
play
does...
He was at work at a tobacco farm, or he was enslaved by tobacco farmer?
He was enslaved,
okay,
but he did work. At a tobacco farm / factory.
True.
He was very much a slave. The story goes in this play is that we meet him as he has now become this world-renowned magician after mailing himself to freedom and then got remarried to his wife, Jane, while living in the UK. And so it starts there, and we kind of go through this otherworldly, nebulous space of what it is for him to really figure out how to move in this new world and this new situation that he's found himself in. I don't want to give too much away, but yeah.
Yeah, suffice to say there's some magical realism that takes place.
Oh, very magical.
Yes. and it's about a magician. And I do have to say that one of the scenic elements I really love, there's a beautiful hand-painted drop in this show. It's just beautiful.
It is so beautiful. And what I love about that drop is that immediately you're taken into a time and a place.
Immediately, as soon as you walk in.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So I'll leave this up to you. So I want to talk to Lee and Yanina. I mean, in terms of your characters, tell us how much we can hear about your characters. Who are you? Yanina.
Sure. So I play Nancy, who was Henry's first wife. Mm-hmm. She was enslaved all of her life, for what we know. In his autobiography, there's a chapter that talks about the last day that he saw Nancy. And so in the course of our play, we're able to kind of imagine what would happen and what was their life like prior to Henry being freed and traveling. But also there are some glimpses that we get of what was it like when they were together as both being enslaved people. So from what we know, again, she bore at least four children, was in Kentucky at some point, in Virginia, and then sold to a person in North Carolina. And so,
away from where her husband was.
Yes. So they, as far as we know, they never saw each other again.
Okay.
But they were together for 8 years.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, or together actually for 10 years. 10 years. So a history there that we can only imagine as an actor has been a joy to think about. What were those 10 years like?
Sure.
Right? And also, what was their love like in a way that, like, how strong might... What would you do if your love was so strong and you knew that maybe you could see your person again is kind of the question that Nancy makes me ask.
Oh, interesting. And Lee, you are playing... So Henry Box Brown mails himself to freedom in the United States to Pennsylvania, I think, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then finds his way to England, which is, at the time, less racist than the United States was. And he meets Jane, right?
Yeah. So Jane is the daughter of a Cornish tin worker. She became a teacher. It's her passion. And magic sort of brought them together. I don't want to give too much away, but she became enthralled with him. They had a lot in common. They're both intelligent. She felt very seen by him. And yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff that happens in this play. I don't want to give too much away, but there is a little bit of a love triangle. So
yeah,
it's much more complex than we really see, but there's a lot that goes on between these three characters, and it's really palpable to watch on stage.
So for the three of you, what is it like to explore, you know, you're exploring so many different things mm-hmm. in this, you know, how black people were treated in the United States versus Europe, how people deal with their loved ones mm-hmm. As situations change. How was the process for you? Also, this is a new play.
It is a new play.
So it's never been done before. This is the world premiere. So how was this whole process from you from as an actor to put yourself in these lives that could have some close resemblances to your own ancestry? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How was that for y'all?
I think coming from Kentucky, I was drawn.
Is that where you're from?
I am. Oh, okay. And my mother, you know, she was raised on a tobacco farm. So I think that there was already this element that was familiar to me. And I love what you mentioned about the possibility of ancestry, because I remember learning about Henry Box Brown in Cincinnati, right across from the Ohio River, and like knowing what that significance is. I was honored, you know, like there's an honor there. And also just to know that we're playing real people. I know for me, as I'm like, I started looking at the WPA, Works Progress Administration interviews, and just listening to the narratives of formerly enslaved people. And they're like, I told Jeremy, like for the first kind of week we were together, I was like, ooh, this is heavy. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I am not taking this lightly right now. And I think that the beauty has been from moving from that first rehearsal into the production is the magic of theater and kind of these elements. And because our playwright has gifted us with the gift of magic, I think that that too is like such a nice intervention in the midst of what could just be a very sad and like traumatic space to exist in.
Sure. And how has it been for you, Lee?
It's been good. I mean, this entire process has been incredible. It's my first time being a part of a world premiere. Everybody that's involved in this production has been absolutely stellar to work with. And like Yunina said, this is really heavy subject matter, and I feel like everybody's handling it incredibly well. The space that we rehearsed in felt so safe, and mm-hmm. we were always discussing, you know, these different points and making sure that everybody felt knowledgeable and seen and heard, and that's what made it, you know, so smooth moving into the production, like Yunina said. And I mean, I really do relate to my character. I'm not from the UK by any means, by the way. It's fun to do an accent. I love that. Being an actor is always fun. But I definitely relate
any
to
any English accent
of...
I do sounds like Dick Van Dyke in Mary Poppins.
Yes.
So I think I'd be good in this show.
Thanks for that sample. I love that. but it really has been a pleasure, and with hearing the thoughts and the things that came with what Jared had written alongside Simone's directorial choices, we had a lot of freedom. I felt like mm-hmm. I had a lot of creative freedom with this character. And of course, they are real people, so we want to honor that. And I did as much research as I could about Jane, but there was a lot of holes. Sure. So I had the creative liberty of being able to fill those holes and really get to know this character and know that who she is and what she brings to the table and how she's feeling amongst all this mm-hmm. sort of, you know, heavy weight and chaos, etc. It has been a true pleasure.
Great. We just have about a minute left. But Jeremy, he was a magician. And, you know, first of all, even in today's day and age, you don't see a lot of black magicians. It's just mm-hmm. not something that I'm assuming is huge in black culture. So how is it? First of all, I'm assuming you had to learn some magic.
Just a little
to
bit.
To do this. do you know how it was that he came to magic as a avocation or a vocation?
Yeah, so when he was growing up on his plantation, there was a slave named Tricky Sam that they so
of course there was.
Gave him that nickname, mm-hmm. Who was always doing like magic tricks, especially like sleight of hand and things of that sort. That's where he first learned his sleight of hand, mm-hmm. Was there on the plantation while he was enslaved. And so once he had mailed himself to freedom, he just made himself a student of it. Uh-huh. And he used it as part of his lectures as he would go around, and because he was also an abolitionist, of course, after
of course,
he freed,
yeah.
freed himself. And he used that as a part of his show and his lectures for his magic, which would was what made him his career, what brought him an income, mm-hmm. how him and Jane met. So pretty much he just started a new life.
Amazing.
After that. So, yeah.
So a lot of these just brings up a lot of questions. And the only way for folks to get answers is to perhaps go down to Ground Floor Theater and see the show. You're in your final week. So you've got Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Mm-hmm. Where do folks go to get more information about the show?
They can go to pinfoldtheater.org. Actually, if you just go to that homepage, there's a message that says what's playing now, and we are the first show that's on that website.
Awesome. So it's been so great having y'all on the show.
Can I ask one quick question? Did Penfold commission this play? You say it's a world premiere. Okay.
That they did. This is part of their...
Their
second series, within the series of their commissions.
I think that's to be celebrated. So
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you all for being on the show.
Thank you. And best of luck with your last weekend.
Thank you.
That was Janina Barber-Payne, Lee Eden, and Jeremy Rashad Brown of Penfold Theater's production of Box, playing now through the end of the weekend, through Saturday. And in honor of magic, I just had to play Magic to Do.
Yay.
Here it is. We've got magic to do. We are back. You are listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa and Celia.
Yay!
The dream team. It was so good to have the Box folks on, don't you think? Thank you for that final question. That was lovely.
Yeah, because when people say world premiere, I always wonder, how do people find those plays? And so it's really, really...
Lots of different ways.
Yeah, but to commission it is really exciting.
I don't want to say anything, but I do know that there is a world premiere happening at Ground Floor Theater in August. And it's not a commissioned piece.
So you don't want to say that, though.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to say that Jenna and the Whale opens August 10th. And folks could get more information at groundfloortheater.org/Jenna.
Okay.
That would do it. So locally, we've seemed to hit this little lull in what's going on locally, so there's not a lot going on. But I do want to mention that Alchemy Theater has got a reading of Heroes of the Fourth Turning on July 15th. And Heroes of the Fourth Turning is what's his name? Aubrey. What's his first name? Anybody help me? I'm going to come up with it because it's written right here. My Lord, Will Aubrey, and it is it's about young conservatives gathering after a backyard party. And I remember when it came out, people that listen to this show know that I leaned the other direction politically, but it was a very interesting way of giving a voice to a conservative mindset that it's not necessarily... it's more conversation striking than what we typically hear from the other side. But it is a reading at the Alchemy Theater. They've got a very small place, so you need to get a reservation if you're going to do it. And you can get information at thealchemytheater.org. Other things happening around town going on right now is Box. We just talked to them. They're still at Ground Floor Theater till the 8th. Noises Off is through the 9th. Did you see Noises Off?
I have not seen Noises Off.
I should say that joining us here is Scott Shipman, who I have not seen in a long, long time. Hi, Scott. You know what? I'm going to turn your microphone on just for the heck of it. Go ahead.
Oh, how dare you. Yeah, yes, it's lovely to be back. Thank you.
It's good to see you. And Madison Akins, who I've never met.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome. Either of you see Noises Off?
I did. I very much enjoyed it.
Me too. There was almost across the board, good, which I don't always say. I don't often say, actually. So I really enjoyed it. Folks have just a few more days to see that over at Zach Theater. Not a spoiler, but there's a revolving set, which is always fun to watch.
Always.
And they theatricalize it instead of letting it just happen. It's part of the show. So something to see. Other things playing around town right this very second. The Art of Martyrdom is at the Vortex through the 9th. I went to see that. And you went to see that as well, Celia, right?
I did.
Did you enjoy it?
I did.
Good. It's the end of that story.
Well, it's a nice mixture of contemporary and, 12th century.
Yep. And that is also... a world premiere. And it just dawned on me, hopefully it's that I did our Today in Theater History But I can't find the file. So we may not get Today in Theater History. But here's the deal about Today in Theater History, is that there was nothing, no theater stuff,
no
really. There was no history. There was a bunch of birthdays.
It's like that one day back when there was no news.
Yeah.
And they said, there is no news.
There's no news.
Well, it's hot, you know.
It is
so
hot.
And it's the day after the 4th of July. So people are sort of deafened from all of the fireworks.
So that's the scoop. So lots of stuff happening around town starting next week. And we're gonna start getting a lot of people in here talking about all the good shows here. One of which is a little show called Matilda, which we're going to talk about in just a little second. Because there's so many birthdays, I am going to play Happy Birthday, Darling from Bright Lights, Big City. We'll be right back.
Happy birthday, darling.
We are back. You are listening to Off Stage and On the Air on KOOP. You got me, Lisa Sheps, and we got you,
Celia Hughes.
Celia Hughes. And we had Nicole Shiro all the way from the East Coast.
Yes, we did. At Silver Lake, I think it was. Spring Lake.
Spring Lake. You've got my disease.
Well, I lived in Silver Lake for 1 year.
Where is Silver Lake?
It's just outside of Lake Placid.
Oh, okay. Yeah, not even close to Spring Lake.
No, but
Spring
I lived in a little town called Hawkeye.
Oh, lovely. I do love the Adirondacks region. I was just talking to somebody 2 days ago who was in a little town just near Lake George. So we're all hanging out around the same area of the world. So let's introduce officially our guests from Zilker Theater Productions. We have Scott Shipman, who is playing Miss Trunchbull.
Yes, hello, hello.
Hello, hello. And we have, I'm guessing that Matilda herself, is that correct?
Yes.
Madison Akins, hi.
Hi.
So, Matilda, Roald Dahl.
Yeah.
I didn't need to say that. I just like to say it.
Makes sense. It's
Roald
fun to say.
Roald Dahl.
It rolls off the tongue.
It does.
Roald Dahl.
Trippingly off the tongue. Tell us about this show. What is this show, Matilda?
This show is very much of a feel happy, like it has a happy ending, which is great, as always.
You know, I do have to say that the most of the time when you describe a Roald Dahl show, it feel good was not one of the adjectives.
Might get there eventually, but there's some struggles on the way.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Actually, I did.
Yeah, there, like you said, there is a lot of struggles along the way, but it has a happy ending like most Roald Dahl, and I also really enjoy the music of it. It's a great rite of passage.
But yeah, it's that story about the young lady who, you know, doesn't have a particularly happy home life, and gets enrolled in a school where there is not a particularly kind headmistress, but she
played
finds,
by Scott Shipman.
Yes, but she does find a lovely teacher who believes in her and nurtures her and helps her through all those downturns.
So. Yeah. So Matilda obviously opened up on Broadway about, I don't know, 10 years ago, something like that. It's been has done quite well all the way through. It started out in England.
Yeah.
And we've talked about it a lot on this show. But of course, Matilda, the book has been around for quite some time. I don't know when it was written because I don't do research. But what I think is going to fare really well for Zilker Productions is the fact that the movie came out last year.
Yeah, it was very convenient. I do think that's going to be help it be very popular because the movie version, the Netflix version, was great.
It was really good, and I'm not 100% fond of the play, but I loved that movie.
And of course, there's stuff in the stage show that they cut out of that. So even people who are very familiar with that are going to get new stuff that's exciting that they aren't familiar with.
Rest in peace, the telly song. I miss that one.
We have it. It's back.
We have it.
Oh, you have it?
Yeah.
Oh, good. All right. That was the movie. It took it out. Good. Yes. Rest in peace temporarily. So Zilker Productions is out there in the park.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't need to tell you it's a little warm right now. Have you been, are y'all out in the park rehearsing now?
Yeah, we are. We've been out there for about 2.5 weeks now. And it's, you are correct that it is not cool. However, I mean, it's not that bad up on the hillside. A breeze brushes through about half hour after we start, and it's nice and pleasant out there with everyone. But,
and I will say, as I sit out on my deck at my home with a little adult beverage, after sundown, it's not terrible.
And it's one of the reasons we don't start until after the sun goes down.
Yeah.
Well, plus you want the lighting to work.
Yeah, that's a positive as well. But for me, it's the heat.
So, Madison, I want to hear your take on Matilda. How are you playing this role?
So I've played it so I read the book when mm-hmm. I got the role, and I tried to, I also watched the original movie, the musical that came out on Netflix a year ago. And
I've never seen the original movie. I've heard of it, but I've never seen it. Go ahead. Sorry.
So, I took little, like, how she reacts to things, and I tried to sort of mimic that, with also putting my own little spin on it.
Of course.
So, yes. And then my lines, I've made them very much my own because I'm not the only Matilda. There's two Matildas.
Oh, okay.
So you could definitely tell that there's a difference between both of ours because of our different ways to think about it.
So tell me, how is the splitting of the role working? Are you doing every other performance?
Very similar to that, yes. So we have like a schedule, and my friends and family hate me because we didn't get it till like a few weeks ago. But
excuse me, I don't believe that they hate you. I find that difficult to believe. And I happen to know somebody's here that could argue that point.
So, yeah. So, so we do split it every other night-ish.
Okay.
And we are in the show when we're not Matilda as an ensemble character.
Oh.
And I find that really fun because I can do whatever I want with that.
There you go. So, Scott, I don't know how this is for you. First of all, well, before I ask this question, what's your take on Trunchbull?
Well, one of the things that I enjoy about Matilda and sort of my viewpoint is that to me it feels like it's sort of told through her lens. It's her story, and for there being a sort of a youthful narrator viewpoint, it allows for the adults to be aggrandized, you know, uh-huh. Like the nice people are the nicest people in the world, and the evil people are the most evil people in the world. And so there's this fun freedom that comes from just being able to be gloriously despicable. And so I like to lean into that and be like, have that fun. Also, because of the makeup and the costume and all that stuff, it's also real fun to see how often I can make the kids break.
Oh, that's mean.
It's bad.
And by break, Scott means break character, laugh on stage.
Indeed,
correct?
Yes, yeah. not actually snapping bones or anything.
which is absolutely okay during rehearsal.
we'll keep that to rehearsal.
So let me ask you this, and I don't know how. Who's your cohort? Who is your other Matilda? What's the actor's name?
Her name is Avery Pitts.
I love Avery Pitts. I don't know who that is. So I split a role with somebody once in a production of House of Yes, and we played me and Pidge. Boy, I forgot Pidge's last name. But we played the characters so differently, like 180 degrees. I often felt bad for the other characters on stage because they had to play two different things. Have you had that kind of dealing between the two Matildas?
Yes, but I love it. It's really fun for me because it helps you be, you know, in the moment and really sort of commit to it and pay attention to what's going on, get out of my own actor head and stop mm-hmm. thinking about what I'm doing and just be in it. So there absolutely is differences in how they approach it. You know, Avery is particularly sassy sometimes, and and so there's more of a personality conflict between Trunchbull and Matilda in that one, and it's just it's very fun for me as a performer to get to play off the different energies.
Which Matilda is easier to break?
Is it easier to break?
Probably me.
You know, I'm gonna say I've gotten both of them a couple of times.
Well, great. I just have to, Madison, I want to just talk to you for a little bit. You're obviously, I'm going to guess that you are not out of college yet.
Oh, gosh, no.
What grade are you in, or what grade are you going into?
I'm going into seventh grade next year.
You're a rising seventh grader.
Yes.
And do you take theater at your schools?
So actually next year I'm going to be taking a theater program. So basically, like, from the hours to 1 to 4, I'm doing full-on theater, dancing, acting.
Great.
Also with the school aspect.
Is this something that you are considering as a lifelong path?
You know, I have been, but it's very hard when you're an adult and trying to pay the bills, which is what I've noticed.
I have no way to know what you're talking about. True. Well, let me just say, as someone that spent time in New York as a performer that was not a triple threat, you are going about it right. Because if you are going to take that path, it's really important to be able to sing and dance as well as you act, so that you can be a triple threat. Yeah. Triple threats are amazing.
And this is also the time for you just to really have a good time. And it sounds like if you're going to be doing this every afternoon, 5 days a week, right?
Four days a week.
Yeah,
don't make them work harder than they're already working.
Oh, schooling. Yes, schooling. My bad.
Oh,
yeah. So I think it's a great time just to give it up and have a great time and explore, because again, you don't know how you're going to be feeling 4 years from now or 6 years from now. Yeah. But now is the time to really explore and have a good time.
Wonderful. So when does Matilda open?
Friday.
Yeah, the 7th.
Friday on the 7th. That's the day after tomorrow.
Yes, indeed.
Are y'all excited?
Very much so. We had yesterday off, a brief little day of rest, and then we're back at it again tonight. And it's a lot. It's a lot. I leave tired every night, but in a good way, you know?
It's always scary, too, because it's like, wow, we've come a long way.
Well, the good news about the theater out there at Zilker is they now have bathrooms.
And indeed, air conditioning.
Yeah. Air conditioning in the dressing rooms for a while, I think.
We've had the air conditioning in the dressing rooms, and they did install backstage dressing rooms a while back, but now they also have the additional restrooms for the people on the hillside.
Oh, that I didn't know.
Yeah.
That's a reason to come.
Yeah, it's right next to the hillside. No more of those like lines of portable restrooms. There's actually like a system out there.
Wonderful.
For people.
Where can folks go to get more information about this show?
They can go to zilker.org.
Great. Well, Scott and Madison, thank you all so much for coming on the show. I really look forward to it. Madison, I look forward to seeing you on my show many, many times in the next few years.
Thank you.
Okay.
Lovely to be back. Thank you so much.
Okay. That was Madison Akins and Scott Shipman of Zilker Theater Productions, production of Matilda, playing July 7th through August 12th. For more information, zilker.org. And, you know, whenever I do anything for Matilda, I have to be naughty.
Jack and Jill went up the hill.
Thank you for coming on and helping us. I kind of want to pick up on a little piece. We have an extra few minutes. So you and I, before the show, were talking about show descriptions for... Audio descriptions for people that have vision problems. So that's something that ArtSpark does. Can you give folks an idea of what that's like? Because, you know, a lot of people would say, well, how could a blind person enjoy theater? Help in that.
Yeah, well, a lot of blind folks go to the theater and they go to the movies and they sort of have to creatively decide what's happening during the long, you know, silences or when action is happening. And so with audio description in the theater, we do what's called pre-show notes. So we set up ahead of time describing sets, reading from the playbill if there are notes from the director or anything like that. Sorry, actors, we don't really go into who's playing what unless we are trying to kill time because something's happened on the stage. But we fill that in, and then during the actual course of the performance, we use the time between dialogue and the pauses in the dialogue and the long periods of time if action is going on to actually say what we see.
Great. Well, so are you just standing next to a person speaking out loud in their ear?
No, actually, a lot of times, like if we're at the Performing Arts Center, we're up in the projection booth up on the fifth floor, sitting in the dark.
Sure, but you have a way of doing things in smaller theaters, too.
Right.
So this isn't just for the big boys.
We recently did something at Ground Floor Theater. I think you've heard of them. And
vaguely familiar.
I like to be as far away from the audience as possible because we use a steno mic, so it muffles the sound. It goes over our nose and our mouth. And but it's still, if we're sitting in the audience, sometimes people can hear a whoa, 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 whoa. So that's us. That's me talking into the microphone. So I sat in the little in that little alleyway that between the light board and the office, and sat in a chair there and had my equipment set up.
Sure. And you're wearing, it looks like almost a scuba mask. It covers your mouth so that it doesn't disturb other people.
That's a steno mic.
So that's the thing that I want to make sure that people know, that this is something that they can request. If you have vision issues, you could make a reservation at a theater and request audio description.
So if you're going to the theater, you can say to the theater, I would like audio description. Now, the theater might have some timing issues. They might say, I need to have a little bit more, like they can't do it on demand, because right now we don't have describers at every theater.
Sure.
But, you know, every theater is aware of it, or should be aware of it, and you can certainly request it. And then they reach out to ArtSpark, and we find one of our trusty describers to do
Wonderful.
The show.
Well, that's amazing. We are completely out of time. Thank you for co-hosting with us. Remind people when your show is on at Co-op.
Monday afternoons from 2 to 3.
Wonderful. We've got the Austin Cooperative Radio Hour coming up next. And just like it's just like a flashback, Austin Common Radio Hour with John Hoffner is what's happening this week. And then I will be back next week with somebody, I don't know who, when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. And this is just a shout out to our new volunteer coordinator, Kyle Traeger. He is sitting in our office. We welcome him, and we're glad that he's here.
Welcome, Kyle.
Working with us. And in his honor, we're going to play from the show Days of Hope, Song of the English Volunteer. We'll see you next week.
A foolish boy, a bloody red, he must be off his bloody head. Oh, England, if all these things were true, I'm still where I must be.